From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codename Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It is the top of the week as we continue our march toward 2022. So much stuff is going on in the news. The trial of Ghislaine Maxwell has reached a new milestone as the court tries to pick jurors that don't seem biased, which is going to be a tall milkshake. Most interestingly, perhaps defendants or co-defendants have been published. They include things like the Weinstein Company and Walt Disney, a lot of other people. It's available online. You can read it now, but we're holding on an update for that until we get more information and maybe see what the trial shakes loose, if it is indeed an actual trial and not a very wealthy kangaroo court. But for now, for anyone who's paying attention to news, things are looking fragile, folks. They always have been kind of a house of cards, but now we're seeing great growing unrest that was predicted in countries across the world, places like Chile, places like Eastern Europe, Central Europe,
the United States.
And the United States, spoiler alert, stay tuned for the entirety of this segment. We're also going to see something that is causing experts in the world of online activity to say, hey, maybe people are getting dumber. For now, maybe we open up with a story of unrest from here in the good old U.S. of A. You guys, have you ever been in a Louis Vuitton store?
Yes, there's a really bougie mall here in Atlanta. Is it Lennox or Phipps?
One of them
is
bougier
than the other. Yeah, Phipps is the bougie one.
They
have a Louis Vuitton store. I think I didn't go in because it was like COVID times, and they were limiting how many people could be in there at once. But I did walk past it, and it sure looked fancy.
Yeah, our office used to be right by those two malls, which are walking distance from one another. Lennox Mall, which has by far the better food court, and Phipps Mall, which is very much for the upper class and doesn't have the best food court, which is mystifying to me. I guess the idea is that if you have the wherewithal financially to shop at a place like Phipps Plaza, then you are not the kind of person who enjoys a good greasy burger, which I feel like is an unfair stereotype. But
they do have some really expensive food over there, though.
They do. They have some unnecessarily fancy restaurants and weird themes to them as well. Maybe there's an Eyes Wide Shut kind of vibe that we just weren't getting when we were a bunch of like broke video makers.
I think you're right.
So another store that's kind of fancy or to some, I don't know. Is Nordstrom a fancy store? Where is it in like the hierarchy of department stores?
Medium, I think. And then there's also Nordstrom Rack, which I think is like the more like middle class facing version of Nordstrom. Maybe. Okay. No, Nordstrom's like one of those legacy New York kind of Fifth Avenue, you know, department store. That's how I think of it. But I'm not really sure. It's like fancier Macy's, I think.
Can I say this? I went into a Macy's to buy some clothes recently for a thing, and I didn't realize that it was all these big expensive brands that filled Macy's when it comes to clothing. For some reason in my mind, it was like shopping at any other, I don't know. Gosh, I just realized I don't spend enough money maybe on clothes. I don't know. I've never seen more expensive clothing in my life than at that Macy's. And then I was told by a friend that that's like on the cheap side. So now I just don't know what to think, guys.
Oh, did you get a suit?
I got some parts of a suit.
Nice, man. Nice. It's strange because also the era of brick and mortar department stores has been on the decline for a while with the rise of online shopping, exacerbated by the rise of COVID. Here's what's going on. Looting Looting is happening en masse. It's not getting a ton of reporting, which is kind of odd because it is red meat for the sort of mainstream news that makes money by telling people the sky is falling and the world is ending one way or another. Just a few days ago, this Nordstrom store in Walnut Creek, California, encountered a kind of shoplifting that had not occurred before or since, and probably wouldn't occur outside of an old school riot were it not for social media. Dozens and dozens of people, about 80 people, rushed into this store in Walnut Creek and robbed everything that wasn't tied down. One employee was pepper sprayed. Two others were punched, kicked, subdued. All three of those folks have minor injuries, and thankfully no one was killed. But the suspects were attacking the store as an organized group, and law enforcement isn't sure how this happened. But think about this. This is cinematic. 25 cars or so blocked the street and ran interference while a crowd of almost 100 people ran into the same store. Think about how understaffed stores are now. There's no way for people to stop them. Even if you are one of the security folks and you're the best person, you're like the Captain America of department store security, you have no chance against 80 people. In fact, also, many corporations have laws that prevent these security guards from physically engaging with a shoplifter or something, right? So we have video from the scene thanks to the good efforts of Jody Hernandez. And Jody Hernandez is a journalist in the area. She found that of these 80 people who were in ski masks, who were carrying crowbars, etc., three managed to be arrested. And that is a terrible rate of success for law enforcement. I wanted to bring this story to everyone because it tells us some pretty fascinating things. First, it was clearly coordinated. This is crowdsourcing, like the Improv Everywhere people, except instead of doing a cutesy, seemingly spontaneous dance party, they have like gone on TikTok or Telegram or Signal or what have, probably not Facebook, because Facebook is so hilariously compromised. Facebook is an op at this point, but they've probably been on TikTok or something like that, planning to pull this off. So we've got short staffing, we've got social media allowing for this kind of planning, and then add to that, because of concerns about supply chains, these brick and mortar stores, these physical locations, are trying to amass more inventory than they usually would have, right? So they want to get ahead of possible shortages as the holidays loom closer and closer. So this means it's the perfect time to commit a crime like this. And we're not condoning it. I don't think any of us are, but we are saying the timing couldn't have worked out better. Had you guys heard about this before we talked about it on air?
Nope.
No,
I just heard about it looking through the news this morning. Seems pretty intense. I've heard of things kind of like this before that we've like talked about just in amongst the three of us. But this seems like a whole operation that you could make like a TV series about, kind of thing.
This isn't tied to any like opportunism around like riots or unrest or anything. This is just like its own thing.
No ties to Ahmed Arbery, no ties to the Rittenhouse decision. This did not occur in a vacuum, though, because there were other lootings the Friday night before in Union Square, another crowd attack, and other areas of San Francisco. A Louis Vuitton store got hit, a Burberry store, a jewelry store, a Walgreens, an eyeglass shop for some reason, a Bloomingdale's, and even cannabis dispensaries. And I understand there's money there, and I understand there's marijuana there, but also, as one of the employees doubtlessly said, like, think about the karma, dude. What are you doing? We're not the man. We're not the power structure. But they still got they got hit. And when they got rolled, the people responsible for these crimes made off for the most part. Hashtag no Bernie. What I'm saying is they got away. And this is something that I think the U.S. will see more of in the future.
In response, law enforcement in the area is pledging to, quote, flood the street with cops. So there are going to be more police out there, but they're out there after the fact. And so what I first, before we get into a thought experiment, I have to mention that in San Francisco alone, overall crime is up almost 52%. Larceny and theft is up almost 88% from last year. And we know that there are two big seasons for a lot of these kinds of crimes. When the holidays are on the way and people need to get gifts or they feel social pressure to do so. And summer, when a lot of older kids are out, right? And they're out of school and they've got more free time. But with this, I propose that the three of us and you there at home have a bit of a thought experiment. And it's similar to something we had thought about several months ago, I think. Time is odd. Let's say we're planning a crime like this. We're not, to anybody in our legal department listening, but let's say we're planning a crime like this, and we crowdsource through some online forum, hopefully using proxies to hide our identities, the idea that we're going to get together, we're going to hit up FIPS, or we're going to hit up Linux, and we do so, and most of us get away. Right. And then the police presence is now being increasingly prioritized in Buckhead. What have we done? Our next move, if we continue this caper, is to hit someplace far away from Buckhead, right?
Mall of Georgia, baby.
Yeah. Hey.
Disney right. Store.
Yep. The Fort Knox of Atlanta, the Mall of Georgia.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the summer situation. I can't remember if I mentioned this in the podcast before or not, but over the 4th of July weekend, I went to a get-together at our buddy Alex's girlfriend's family's place and came back and, had been drinking and stuff and went to play my Nintendo Switch later that night and my controller wouldn't connect. And I all of a sudden realized, oh, my controller won't connect because the Switch and the dock and the power supply and everything are gone. And it was the only thing that was stolen. My daughter's room was kind of rifled through, but it clearly was the kind of crime that, like, you know, kids on bikes looking to just kind of like smash and grab or like, you know, just check doors and take whatever they could carry were after. And it was a really weird feeling. I felt, you know, especially after noticing that my kid's room had been rifled through, but nothing else was stolen. And I have a whole room, you know, my house was full of like, you know, thousands of dollars worth of equipment for recording and music and stuff. And they didn't even go in there. But clearly was a crime of opportunity.
Yeah. And conversely, or in contrast, these are crimes that are premeditated, right? Those kids may have been on bikes saying, let's see if there are any houses without cars in the driveway, right?
That's right. 100%.
Yeah.
I think the fact that it was 4th of July and they knew that a lot of people were off, you know, traveling or like at parties or something was what created the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And in this case, what we're seeing is a incredibly effective tactic. This has been employed in other parts of the world before without social media. In fact, in Europe, I believe some segments of the population have been accused of engaging in this tactic pretty often. And it ties into, to be candid with you, it ties into discrimination against the Roma population of various countries who are said to go en masse into some kind of store that usually has 1 to 2, maybe 3 employees, and just absolutely crowd bomb it. So you can't keep track of what everybody is doing, much less stop one person amid that crowd. It's kind of like that earlier example of could Travis Scott or could any entertainer isolate one person in a crowd of 50,000, you know, on a smaller level. So this is a very successful strategy, which means it's going to be used again. It's also occurred in Illinois, in Oak Brook. There were people who swarmed another Louis Vuitton store. And we know that there was preparation because they came with the right kit for the job. They had garbage bags and their coats. They had their identities concealed with a balaclava or a ski mask, I guess you would call it here. And they came with the tools they needed to open the containers holding the high value stuff. What this means now is that this presents a danger, not just to you if you work at these places, not just to you if you live in the neighborhood, but it presents a danger to you if you live in these cities, because this could be also used as a pretext to further militarize the police force in your neck of the woods, which I know sounds like a distant concern. And people may say, well, this is a necessary thing. Police are supposed to stop robberies and things like this. But what happens when there is a group of 80 to 100 people who look like they could be anyone because of their disguises, and you're someone who is in the area, then you kind of become a suspect. It's unfair to everyone involved. But this also, I think, maybe leads us to some philosophical points. What do you guys think?
Well, yeah, for me, I think we're going to see a lot more of this as the divide continues to widen between those who are able to go and drop a ton of money at a mall and those who are not or likely will never be able to do that in, you know, within any short term future. And as a society, as a culture, just through popular culture, we are doing that to ourselves. You know, we think about the television shows, the movies, everything, not everything, but most things that exist for consumption that are very popular, it, you know, involve clothing like this, involve watches and other just material things that exist on characters and are part of a character. Even in reality TV shows, it's like the thing to have if you're going to have status. And if you cannot achieve those things or get those things by normal means, then why not resort to something like this?
Yeah, I mean, all these things are like signifiers of this class and status and this, that, as those, you know, two poles become farther and farther apart. It becomes kind of a stand-in for a widening discontentedness. You know, I mean, I think it's deeper than just wanting the stuff. It's a way of like lashing out. I mean, to me, these are the kind of signifiers of what you might see in the climate leading to an uprising. You know, like where people are truly unhappy and they're seeing this divide between the super rich and the even just the middle class, and let alone if you're actually, you know, quite poor or disenfranchised in some way, or you've lost your job and never gotten back on your feet after the pandemic, and all the while others are just raking it in, you know, and kind of maybe not intending to, but rubbing it in your face in many ways. I understand where that it's a form of kind of hurt, you know. I mean, I really do. I think we all see it, even if we're very lucky to have the jobs that we have. You know, there is this American ideal of kind of always wanting more and always wanting the next thing and not ever having enough be enough. And that's a product of the narratives we're fed with reality TV, like you're saying, Matt, and now more so with social media and just seeing everyone oversharing, especially celebrity types and folks with like just way too much money. And you start to be like, well, I deserve that. I should have that. Why shouldn't I have that?
I
think for some, it causes them to lash out.
Sure. Yeah. Like I was saying earlier, I can't remember why I was saying this, but it's the coupons, baby. Who has the most coupons? How many coupons can you get before you die? Yeah. Yeah. How many coupons? Let me get the name brand thing. Whatever. You guys are making really good points. And I would like to end with a message, with a twofold message. First, to the folks who hear about stories like this and agree with our prediction that these will only continue in the future, I would want to caution you from being misled by bad actors in mainstream media. This is red meat for folks who want to delegitimize various protests. And many protests have occurred over this time. When you hear about looting during like a Black Lives Matter rally or something, you have to ask yourself, were those actually conscientious protesters who suddenly decided to break in someplace for a scarf? Or was this organized crime seeing a tremendous opportunity? I advance to you that it was the latter, much more often than the former.
Ben, I couldn't agree with you more. I recently had a private DM chat with a listener who I posted something you know, a political opinion about the Kyle Rittenhouse outcome. And somebody had a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to that and said, oh, all these Black Lives Matter protesters are just a bunch of opportunists and this, that, and the other. And, you know, it disgusts me where I live. I just see them, like, literally, you know, moving in on Targets and all of these shopping centers and just literally, you know, disrupting people's lives and commerce and just throwing bricks through windows and stealing stuff. And I made the point to this individual that I think for the most part, there may be some issues in leadership with BLM at times, but I think for the most part, he's talking about how they were paid. And I'm like, well, what's more likely, that they were paid by Black Lives Matter or by the opposition in an effort to just, you know, to delegitimize that movement and call attention to the bad actors who are maybe not even part of the movement at all?
Yeah. And this, my second point, and this is the message that that we need to end on. We're going long, and I want to thank everybody listening for your patience, because what I'm about to say is mission critical here in many ways. If you're involved with these things, if you are an opportunist, I know how exciting it can be to, for any number of rationalizations, say, hey, we're fighting the power. We're fighting these big evil corporations. We're fighting inequality. We're taking stuff back. But the people who are going to end up bearing the brunt of these actions, the consequences, it goes way deeper than the three people who got popped out of 50 to 80 or whatever. What you will be doing results in red meat for the same organizations that you are attempting to fight against. It galvanizes them. It feeds them. It empowers them. It gives them the wherewithal, the casus belli, to further oppress people, to do worse things to people who have nothing to do with you, that you will never meet, just regular people. And ask yourself, you know, if it feels exciting to skirt on the wrong side of the law. I think everybody's done that a time or two. How would you feel if you, like, had to look in the face of the next person who was an elderly lady who dies because there was a kick door at the wrong address? How would you feel about that? Does the sweater still feel good? Do you like walking around in the boots? How's that PlayStation? Does it play the same? We're going to leave it there. And pause for a word from the sponsor. We'll be back with more strange news.
And we're back. And Ben, I think you made some excellent points in that last story. It's obviously something that is very, very relevant to all of our lives and indicative of kind of like where we're going as a culture. Unfortunately, another place that we're going as a culture is in the direction of being kind of dumb. That I think that follows suit to that story, but also in terms of just guarding our own personal data. It seems like a day doesn't go by where we don't hear about some giant hack of some corporation, you know, with all of this personal information being compromised or financial information or whatever. You'd think after all of that, all of those news stories, all of these conversations about Russian hacking and, you know, us being target of international infiltration, you know, to steal our identities or whatever, the people would be a little more clever with their passwords, you know, use like two-factor authentication, use one of those password wallets, etc. But unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be the case. And full disclosure, the study that I'm about to reference is in fact from or was financed by a password wallet company, a company called NordPass. Which is very much, you know, it's a service where you can have them create strong passwords, have them generate new passwords on the regular, where you use like a master password to keep your password wallet, everything kind of safe. But they did, in fact, they have for quite a few years running, been coming out with this list of the most common passwords. And the list for 2021 quite closely resembles the list for 2020, with the number one most popular password In all countries, being 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, in their results, the data, they actually have a column of the ranking, the password, how long it took to crack it, and then how many in their study or their analysis, how many there were of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It took them less than a second to crack it, and there are 103,170,552 people that think 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 is a good one. Second only to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, which also took less than a second to crack. The number goes down quite a bit to 46 million and some change. Then you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, followed by QWERTY, password, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0. There you go. Still, all of these take less than a second to crack. And then they start getting a little more interesting as you go down the list. You know, things like swears are very popular. First names with no numbers are very popular. Things like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, Q, you know. I'm surprised I'm not seeing any like asterisks in any of this or any like ASCII, you know, like, I mean, I try to always have, you know, all of the hallmarks of a strong password in my password, just like a capital letter, some sort of non-numeric symbol, a number, you know, and a mix of letters and numbers. Liverpool is number 121. I love you one is number 122. You got things like Michelle. Funny enough, first names take longer to crack, for obvious reasons, because I guess sure. You just go through obvious first names. So Michelle took 3 hours to crack. There's 923,000 Michelles. Andrew, but weirdly, Andrew only took 2 minutes to crack. I'm a little confused about that metric.
Because if it's a brute force hack, it starts on A.
Oh, there you go. Thank you, Ben. Nailed it.
There's something really interesting before you go. I got to say, I love this image, Noel, of somebody doing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, right? And that's number one on the list. It's easily cracked. But I love the idea that 1 through 9 is somehow more difficult. Like someone's cracking the code, they get to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and they're like, that doesn't work. And they're like, that's it. I don't know. There's no bigger number. What's the next bigger number? Like that old Mr. Show sketch.
Exactly.
Like, they can't think of it. They're like, surely
this one's one louder. This one's one bigger.
Can I just say how much I love the password that is QWERTY UIOP? Because it theoretically, if you were going to enter that password, let's say to open your computer, you would just run your line, if you have a QWERTY keyboard, across one section of your keyboard and it would open your machine. It's pretty amazing.
No, there's some wacky ones in here. So if you go to Austria, this is a neat study because you can go through and look at them by country. And so, of course, depending on the different countries, you get different like kind of pop cultural touchstones and things like that. One thing that I found really interesting is in Australia, number 26 is MySpace and the numeral 1, which took 3 hours to crack. And there are 19,247 MySpace 1s. Didn't think MySpace was still in play, but maybe it's a different deal in Australia. But it's a thing. People are being not particularly good stewards of their data and of their personal information, it would seem. This whole study was funded by NordPass, but it was compiled in partnership with independent researchers that specialize in cybersecurity research. Vice has a great article about it. They looked at 4 terabytes of data across 50 different countries. And this is the third year that they've done the research. And again, you can also see it broken down into individual countries. Patricia Cerniascate, excuse me for butchering that, it's a tricky one, who's a spokesperson for NordPass, had this to say to Vice: we honestly didn't expect to see so many cultural references in the country lists. So depending on the country, you would have, you know, references to the most popular sports teams. So in the US, so you got Steelers, quite popular. In the UK, you've got Liverpool. In Chile, you've got Colo Colo. And in Brazil, Nacional, Sparta in the Czech Republic, Marseille in France, and Schalke 04 in Germany. And then also in Greece, you have Olympiakos. Also lots of beverage names like Guinness in Ireland, and then some religious password as well. In Nigeria, Christ was very popular, and in Saudi Arabia, Bismillah topped the list. So yeah, it's pretty wild. Let's see. The spokesperson for Nord Pass also had this to say: for the first time ever, Eminem has entered the list. And speculation in this Vice article, was this some sort of millennial revenge for Gen Z TikTokers trying to cancel Eminem, which is an icon that they grew up with? They're trying to like keep him alive in a word that no one will ever see, in spirit, I suppose. Naruto and Superman and Pokemon were also popular choices. It's fascinating stuff. And of course, you know, if you go to the list and see, God forbid, one of your passwords is on there, I would change that bad boy right away and maybe consider subscribing to NordPass, who are not sponsoring this episode.
So far as we know.
But what do you guys think? I mean, you know, as being part of a big company like we are literally forced to change our password regularly. And it can't be the same as the last like five we've had. So inevitably, what a lot of people probably end up doing is just adding a numeral at the end or upping the numeral by one digit at the end, because it gets a little ridiculous. It starts to become very unwieldy to remember all these passwords, especially if you're using one for work, you're using one for your personal emails. Maybe you have, you know, bank accounts and crypto accounts and wallets and things like that. You start getting into password overload. So I understand the malaise around it a little bit, but not to the degree of some of these in the top 25 that I'm seeing. I mean, top number 25 overall is 9876543 21.
Yeah.
And before that is 666666.
So to go back to the question you had asked, I can't speak for anyone but myself here. One of the easiest ways to guard against this is, first, like Matt said, to have a more secure password, but secondly, to practice things like two-factor authentication, which can feel like a pain in the keister, you know, because you have to have your phone with you or some, you know, other channel of communication. And also that's something that not everybody has, but it's an important and a relatively painless way to circumvent a lot of these problems. And that's why you'll only see two-factor authentication exploding more in the future. You'll also see biometric identification. Like, hey, it doesn't matter how complex this string of text you know is. We need your fingerprint. Let me get a look at that eyeball. That kind of stuff. Which personally, I'm not the biggest fan of. I understand when it needs to be used in things like military applications or very sensitive intellectual property kind of stuff. But for this, like if you're going on Facebook or what have you, then just have it set up to send you a text so you can prove that you are who you are. And that should stop a lot of hacking.
Ben, I imagine you're not a iPhone user who uses the Face ID.
I don't care for it.
And I understand why, not to over-speculate, but maybe in your thinking, this is not military grade, you know, like it's a new feature. It seems like maybe it hasn't quite, you know, met the same rigor as what they've been using, you know, in like spy movies for years. Mm-hmm. I mean, Apple might argue otherwise, but is that your thinking, or does it just kind of make you uncomfortable?
Yeah, I mean, to be completely fair, I do not think that anyone cares what my face in particular looks like when I open an iPhone. However, I also don't like the idea of all the dopey faces that I might be making when I'm reading stuff. You know what I mean? Think about when you read on the phone. The angle is terrible. It's right up your nose. Everybody, like if the NSA is looking, they know all your boogers. And this is, so it's for much, much more vain, much more petty reasons on my part, though I do acknowledge there is danger that comes along with pervasive facial recognition, just as there is convenience.
Well, I don't want to get beat up, shot, or stabbed and have my assailant pick up my phone and just go, and then they're in my phone.
That's a good point too, Matt. That's a really good point.
That's like the whole, like for me, that's the whole point of facial recognition. Well, somebody could get hurt and you can still open their phone.
But you see that in spy movies too, man, where someone gets like their throat slit and then, or they literally rip their eyeball out and stick it up to the eyeball scanner, or they drag the body up and hold the face up. I mean, that's a really good point.
In this case, it's literally you're on the ground. Somebody holds your phone by your face and it's open and they've got everything. I don't know. Whatever.
I didn't even think about that. You're really causing me to rethink my use of biometric recognition for my device.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Oh, I wanted to talk about demographics, you guys, age demographics across the world. And when I'm thinking, when thinking about these passwords, I'm looking at Statista. I think that's how you say it. I don't know. Maybe it's wrong. But just that in North America, in I think Europe and a couple other places, you look at the over 65 population and the under 15 population. And I'm imagining a lot of those groups. And in North America, that would be 17% on the older side, about 18% on the younger side. And I'm wondering if those demographics maybe line up with some of these easier passwords to remember or repeated passwords, or even when you get Pokemon and some of the other like really popular things like Spider-Man showing up in passwords.
Yeah, for dudes, you got a lot of people using Metallica and Slipknot. And apparently the most popular band name over the past 3 years, especially in Australia and Canada and Ireland, is Blink-182. I guess because in their minds, you got a word and you got some numbers, so you're already halfway there. Yeah. Add an at symbol to the front of that, and you technically have a strong password.
Maybe switch it up. Do like Blink-41 and some 182, you know?
Love it.
Yeah, hit them with the plot twist, Shyamalan it. I mean, this is only going to be more important, but also we have to remember the biometric information and the facial recognition and all that jazz, all the hits. That's going to be inevitably more common for the average consumer over time, just because it feels more seamless. It feels like it's more secure. It's going to increasingly feel maybe a mark of antiquity to enter it. Like we're quickly entering into a part of technological evolution where it'll seem old timey to use your hands and computer things. Like I'm still fighting. I'll say this. I'm still fighting voice recognition technology being increasingly forced upon me and normalized in a very non-consensual way. Like you call a company, right? It could be a financial services company. It could be a utility company. And you can still, in many cases, access the touch tone menu. But that menu is becoming increasingly more difficult to find. Just the way that Sesame Credits started off as an opt-in thing and then became a mandate. Vocal recognition is becoming a mandated technology, and it's starting in the private industry, right? And so, like, I would love to hear from people who have complained to one of these businesses or asked for details about what they're doing with the audio data they're gathering from your voice. Are you getting a cut of it? The answer is certainly not, if they are selling it. And there's nothing to stop them from selling it in many, many cases.
Yeah, even if we were getting a cut, like we did, I forget what it was. It was maybe a year ago there was a story. Yeah, big data on you, but they boiled it down to a monetary figure, and it ended up being like fractions of a penny per use of your data. So it was like not even valuable to you, or at least at market rate. I'm probably misremembering that a little bit, but it is wildly, all of it, the level of head in the sandness, of which I exhibit plenty. Even Matt, you really did just kind of like pull my head out of the sand when it comes to the biometric face stuff. But like, you know, I know some people who are much more cautious about their cameras on their phones and on their computers, and I just don't give a shit. But I probably should. But at the very least, I do have strong passwords. I have a handful of them, and I don't think any of them have been compromised yet. And I, you know, don't change them frequently. But I used to have one of those passport wallets back in the day, but even that got unwieldy, or I upgraded, and I don't remember exactly what happened, and I lost the software, and I never looked back. But yeah, write in. Let us know. Do you use dumb passwords? Is this a wake up call for you, or do you just not really care? Let us know, write to us at conspiracy@iheartradio.com. And in the meantime, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with one more piece of strange news.
All right, we're back and we're going to keep this short, but this is important. Just like that other podcast on our network, which is awesome.
Yeah. I didn't know if that was a purposeful reference, but yeah.
I really love that show. Okay. I'm going to read to you from an Al Jazeera article that was recently posted as of today when we record this, November 22nd, 2021. In first, United States added to annual list of, quote, backsliding democracies. This is a report that was released by the International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Assistance. Now, you will know just by that name. This is one of these organizations that we've mentioned in the past. Ben, it's an NGO. What are those?
Those, Matt, are non-governmental organizations. It's also an umbrella term. It's a very vague phrase. Not all of them are created equally. Their association in the West generally is something like, these are not for-profit entities that are trying to make the world better in one specific way. However, not everybody shares that opinion, and they aren't all not shady.
Correct.
Is that a fair definition?
It's fair as hell. So this one in particular, you can go to IDEA.int. So that's their organization then, international. And you can learn about them. They have a /about-us page. You can read there. You can read all about the member states that exist within it, including their chair from Australia, their first vice chair from Barbados, and their second first vice chair from Germany. You can learn all about what they do. This is what they say according to their website. They say that membership to this organization is, quote, open to governments which demonstrate by example in their own state their commitment to the rule of law, human rights, the basic principles of democratic pluralism, and strengthening democracy. Interesting stuff there. Mm-hmm. I do have to say, at least on their official website, I'm seeing countries like Belgium, Brazil, Chile, Mexico, India, Philippines, Peru, Panama, Norway. Not seeing the United States. Just putting that out there. Not seeing the U.S. They don't seem to be a part of this organization. So, this organization that does not have the United States within it, or at least as a member state, has said that the United States is backsliding. It is a backsliding democracy, as in it is deteriorating, things are happening, and it is being pushed more towards an authoritarian or hybrid state, as they would describe it.
Well, I think we could have told you that.
Well, maybe that's the way it feels. To me, it perhaps feels that way a little bit personally, just when I look out at events and how things have been shaped and changed over the past, gosh, several decades that I've been paying attention.
Sure.
But to see it put out here in a report that is fairly extensive, if you read the entire thing that you can find on their website, it is a bit alarming. It specifically points to 2019 and 2020 as being a flashpoint for a change that has begun to occur within the United States. Specifically, they're calling out the words and actions of President Donald Trump upon losing his second term election and having a sitting president who's on his way out questioning directly the results of a democratic election within a country, right? Within the country that this president is serving. You know, that's maybe one thing, but it is also, I'll read you this quote. Kind of an alarming thing to have a president question the results of an election, because then that makes everybody else question it. And this is not casting aspersions necessarily directly at President Trump. It's just that occurrence, no matter who was in office or who was questioning the authority of the democratic process, would have eroded this, like, the core democracy of it all.
Well, so much of that core is based on following, you know, kind of protocols and following tradition, you know, and none of it's necessarily enforceable by law. It's just, we just depend on people kind of carrying this legacy of, like, accepting the results of an election and, like, you know, being a good sport. But once you start having someone who's setting the precedent of, well, actually, maybe that we don't need to do that, then you start to see that backsliding, it feels like.
Yeah, it's something I've brought up over the years, and it's something that's easy for people in the U.S. and really the global West to forget. It's that the most vulnerable time in any empire is the time in which a transfer of power occurs. And you might be surprised how many countries don't get it right and how startlingly close they come to dissolution. The peaceful transfer of power is like the number one most vulnerable time. It is literally the equivalent of an animal's molting stage. It's very vulnerable. The skin is new. Will the core survive? And I don't think that's hyperbolic to phrase it this way. I know we're going to get probably, Matt, we're going to get to the writing of John Bago or Bagot Glubb, the guy who put a time limit or proposed an expiration date for empires, right? 250 years, guy? You talk about that?
We can. I mean, we've already talked about that on this segment within our show.
That's true. That's true. So maybe we refer back to that. And instead we say that this is this perceived thing, American exceptionalism as an ideology aside, this perceived danger, if it is a thing that is happening, if this NGO is right, then they are also inherently seeing it at a macrocosmic level. There are other things happening in countries, and they're similar. Like Chile is currently in a runoff, and one of the lead contenders is another Bolsonaro, you know, and that is the current leader of Brazil. There is a far right resurgence, and it's been going on for a while. We talked about it in the past.
Matt, isn't there a connection too with the COVID-19 pandemic? And that's just also something you kind of see historically, like a big upset, a big, you know, kind of inciting event is oftentimes when an authoritarian regime can kind of grab the reins a little bit.
Well, yeah, it's also when you can most clearly see the discontent of the of people who live within a state that is maybe slipping, right? A little bit.
Well, there's unrest. What better time to rob the Nordstroms of democracy? You know what I mean?
See, it's all, my God, it's all coming together.
Also, we have a full episode on empires' expiration dates.
So we do. We do. And this is just to point out this one specific report. And it is also not to say that just the United States is in this boat and is, you know, backsliding into some other form of government, non-democratic. You can read through the report. You can see Hungary, Poland, Slovenia as places that are backsliding, established democracies that are having issues. You can look at a few countries that, according to this NGO, are actually improving, like Ukraine and North Macedonia. However, Ukraine is, like, as we record this, appears to be dealing with some stuff with Russia again. Oh, we'll see what happens if these intelligence reports actually pan out into something terrible or not. Other places like Turkey, Nicaragua, Poland, Serbia, Brazil were rated as having the, quote, most significant democratic declines over the last decade. I can't urge you enough to actually head on over and read the report. You can get it online. It's free. You can look at the entire thing. Just check it out.
Interesting the way it's divided up too. You can select regions and different attributes like representative government, fundamental rights, checks on government. These are like their, I guess, bellwethers for, you know, how they're measuring whether this is the backsliding.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really good work. You know, there are going to be people who say that it has inherent biases. Most works of humanity do. I don't know why that's like some sort of news or surprise. But sometimes that's a bad faith reaction too, because not everybody agrees on the idea that democracy is necessarily a good thing. There are a lot of people who think democracy, as it's sold to other countries, is really a Trojan horse for resource extraction. And as much as I hate to admit it, there is validity in that claim. And then, of course, there are other people who say fascism got a bad name and should get a, you know, let's do it right this time. I don't agree with those folks, but those are those different viewpoints. It's important to say that not everybody agrees on the idea of democracy being the best thing since sliced bread. Or what's that other quotation? The least worst or the best worst form of government. The reason it's important is that this, in theory, when democracy works, it gives you the right to have a problem without being blackbagged and disappeared. It gives you the right to show up and publicly, as long as you're not trying to harm people, say stuff like it's so weird. You'll see protests over like a reboot of a fantasy series that people don't like. And they, we don't like how they change this, that, or the third about the characters. So we're going to protest the studio. And then you'll see other people who are protesting political decisions. You can't do that in every country. Like, people forget how powerful that is. And this is not to be xenophobic. This is certainly not to be nationalistic. This is in the U.S., which is far from perfect. There are a lot of things people take for granted. And one of those things is the fact that you can stand up and you can talk shit in public and you can still, you know, live your life in many cases, as long as you're not saying like, hey, let's get together and burn down the so-and-so. But that's not the case in many other places. Try that in Belarus, you know, try that publicly in Beijing. Try that. See if the rules for Tiananmen Square today are the same as they were when the tanks rolled through. The answer is unfortunately yes.
Jesus. So, starting off the week on a high note here, everybody. check out, there's a Reuters article posted to yesterday, November 21st, 2021, titled "Democracy Slipping Away at Record Rate Intergovernmental Body Warns."
Fun.
Just really just puts the stuffing in the turkey for me. So,
but again, like I'm saying, you're right. It is alarming to see this, but it's also stuff that we can kind of see with our eyes and hear with our ears. And it's just like we are living in a historical time of unrest and division, you know. And I think a lot of what you're describing, Matt, is a manifestation of those divisions.
It's all good, yeah. Bro. Gaia's going to silence us all real soon.
Oh, yeah, that Mother Earth sketch on SNL is pretty funny. Earth is a super organism. That's another interesting episode. We'll see what happens. But I gotta say, as we're closing out, the world is ending for someone every day. There hasn't ever really been a peaceful time in human history since human history began. But it's been cool for some people at some points in time, just not everybody at once. And that's the goal. That's where, you know, that is when you win the game, I guess. For now,
when you get that shopping spree at Nordstrom.
Oh, geez. But for now, we're going to end today's segment. We've asked some questions that we would love to hear your take on. We would love to hear your ideas about the future of crowdsourcing crimes through social media. We'd love to hear your passwords. Send along with a list of your fears, your mother's maiden name, the first car you drove, the city you're born in,
last four digits of your social,
and the last four digits of your social, if you don't mind. And then tell us, in your opinion, the ideas of what a backslide from democracy is, what that means, how to combat it. Is it being alarmist? Is it accurate? And then also, last, and perhaps this is most important, when you order guacamole at a restaurant,
should I was hoping it you were gonna get there.
Chips, or should it come by itself? Is it inherent in the purchase price that you are also getting chips? Not gonna name names, but this is a matter of great importance. This is a matter of great importance to us at the show, so please answer that question for us.
And even more importantly, when Dave & Buster's finally does send some chips out to you, because they don't have servers anymore, they've just got electronics that are supposed to know where you ordered, what you ordered. If they bring you a tiny bit of cheese dip,
like
with
a single dip's
worth of cheese.
Yeah,
dip.
Yeah.
Should you morally send that back because you did not, in fact, order it? Or should you just accept the cheese dip?
I asked Delphi, actually.
Yeah.
The AI, Delphi. Yeah, Delphi. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were referring to the Oracle of. No, the AI.
With a new version of it. And they said it's good.
Were they referring to the cheese dip, though, or the action? Like, I don't know.
Unclear. I tried to follow up. But, you know, we see as though through a mirror darkened, I guess, is the old line. But
boy, do we ever.
But this is, but we want to hear your opinion on this. I love that we're alluding to this at the end. We also want to shout out everybody on Twitter who wrote to us with their own, I mean, this is more of a listener mail thing, but who wrote to us with their own experiments asking the Oracle. You can see those if you visit our Twitter handle, where we are at Conspiracy Stuff. You can also find us on Facebook. We love to shout out our Facebook page, Here's Where It Gets Crazy. You can meet with your fellow conspiracy realists. The memes are good. The discussion is better. And you can also find us on Instagram, where we are Conspiracy Stuff Show. But wait, you might be saying, didn't you guys spend so much time telling me the dangerous, deleterious potential of social media? Aren't I supposed to be off it? How can I contact you? Because I have opinions about guacamole.
Well, that's entirely up to you. But if you wish, you may also contact us via a telephone, old school telephone kind of situation. You can, I think even a rotary still works on it. It's 1-833-STDWITK. You can leave a message. You got 3 minutes. Let us know what to call you. Make up a cool nickname, first name, anonymous, whatever. We will respect your wishes. And most importantly, make sure you let us know if we can use your audio on the show. And then you, yes, you might appear on one of our weekly listener mail episodes. If you don't want to do any of that, there's one final, also somewhat old school way of contacting us. You can send us a good old fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.